Good to go. All right, well, we're glad you came to the class. It's going to be 6 weeks. We scheduled for 2 hours. We may fall a little bit short of 2 hours each time because people start to run out of energy. But there's just too much material to do in the usual hour and a half. All right, so let's get started. Here's our outline. Today is going to be sort of the opening lecture of Religion 101. So we're going to talk about religion in a broader sense. And I'm going to introduce the concept of worldview. All right. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Christianity. Christianity is one of the important world religions.
Yeah.
I was talking to a professor from Pepperdine yesterday, and we're having a conference in June, Christianity and Culture, and he teaches a class, Christianity and Culture. So he was talking about Christianity as a world religion, and he pointed out it's interesting because until a few years ago, there was literally no actual world religion. In other words, no religion that was known throughout the world. And he says there's considered to be six cultural areas in the world, and Christianity is the chief religion in four of the six. So I think it does qualify as a world religion. But really what we want to do is part of how to understand how Christianity fits in with the other religions, well, we need to talk a little bit about Christianity. And to some extent, we want to kind of stand back and look at Christianity from the outside a little bit and ask how somebody who knew relatively little about it, what they would need to know first off about what Christianity really is. So to do that, we'll talk about the Christian worldview a little bit. And then, maybe, maybe not, we'll start talking about Eastern religions today. If so, it'll certainly only be Hinduism. And then Buddhism, Taoism, Jaina, Confucianism, Shinto, Sikhism. All right. Our outline is sort of starting from farther away and coming close. In other words, we're starting from religions that are farther away from Christianity and the Christian worldview, and then moving towards religions that are closer to Christianity and the Christian worldview. Before I do that, Jim reminded me I'm supposed to give out some awards. Now, we've done this Sunday morning, but we don't want to do it every time because, you know, people get a little... So this time we're presenting our awards for the last class here at the class. These are the ones who made every single class. So we need to have a little round of applause here. Steve Dill. Where's Steve? There he is. All right. And Rob Kowalski. Yeah. Made every class. Norma Mathis. She didn't make every class of this class, apparently. All right. Tina Ayala, a very faithful... And Barbara Radcliffe, she signed up. She didn't make it today. And Tanya Okamura, who brought her son. Very good. And just imagine 2 months from now, it could be you. And we might even do it in front of the whole church. That would be even better. All right, and so then we're going to talk about other monotheistic religions such as Islam, Judaism, and Baha'i. And then we'll talk. Then the next section, I call it Scientology, Christian Science, and Other Strange Religions. All right, so we won't spend a lot of time there, but we'll kind of introduce those. And then we'll talk about what I call pseudo-Christian religions, which would be Mormonism, Jehovah's Witness. I meant to erase Seventh-day Adventism. That does not belong there. Seventh-day Adventism, I would say, is a mainstream Christian religion. I just forgot to erase that. And then I don't know how much time we'll have, but we may have some time to talk about Christian denominations we should know more about. All right, so that would include Catholicism, Seventh-day Adventism, and Pentecostalism. We'll see about that. All right, great. So, reading suggestions. I brought all the reading books, I think, except the most important one. It's in my bookshelf, The Universe Next Door. Did anybody get a copy yet?
What's it called again, sir?
It's right there, the first in the list, The Universe Next Door. All right, well, I'll bring my copy next week. You can get it for about $5, Amazon.com. And it's written, although James Sire is this highfalutin scholar guy, he wrote this book purposely, I think, so that, senior level in high school, no problem. And so it's a book on worldview. It's not necessarily a book on world religions. It's a book on worldview. So that's if there's one book I want to recommend for this class, it's going to be that one. And then I have a particular, I don't know if that's the one I brought. I've got plenty of books on world religions. This one here is pretty good. Alright, it's the one that's in, I think it's the one that's up there. Oh, there's plenty of books on world religions. The Illustrated Guide. Is that the one that's up there? Yes. Michael Coogan. Anything by the Oxford University Press generally is going to be pretty good. Anthology of World Scriptures, if you want to get into the scriptures. And this is, you know, pretty simple level. World Religions, Compact Guide. World Religions for Dummies, essentially. Okay. Got a few other things that I'll mention as I go along. Another thing you might want to consider is go to my website. There's an extended essay on worldview. It's at my website. You can see the reference there. This is all going to be at my website anyway, so you don't have to rattle this down. Answering Islam. I think in the modern context, being prepared to talk to, understand, and answer, I guess, Muslims would probably be the most important. And my favorite by far for that is Norman Geisler's book. All right. By the way, I don't know if you go back to the first slide, Dan Condor is going to be a stand-in teacher for me on the fifth class. He's much better on Islam than I am. All right. And he taught on that before for us anyway. I happen to have a conference that weekend. So week number five is going to be my friend Dan Condor on Islam. Let me see. I've got a few other things. Jehovah's Witnesses, Judaism, etc., Bhagavad Gita. Oh, and if you want to borrow one or two of these books, that's fine. A biography of Muhammad. And then the Quran. The other book I want to suggest you consider reading is the Quran. All right. Now, it will be a little bit boring. Okay. A bit repetitive. But I think if you want to be able to talk to Muslims, you probably should know the book that they use. All right, and so I'm going to suggest that. Yeah.
There's various versions of the Quran online. So.
Yeah. But you can get a translation probably used from Amazon for a few bucks. There are a number of different translations. Some of them are much more readable than others. I'm not enough of an expert to tell you which is the best one. You can ask Dan when he comes, okay? And then another one on Mormonism. I've got some copies over there. I just published a book on Mormonism just in November. Okay, great. So let's talk about religion. What is religion? Well, it comes from the Greek word which means to tie. In chemistry, we talk about a ligand. A ligand is a molecule which is attached to another molecule. You don't want to know about that, probably, but that's how I understand it. So, basically, then the word, for what it's worth, it's just a word, right? The word means to tie or bind to the gods. That's the origin of the word. Here's Webster's definition. Any system of faith or worship, the outward manifestation of belief in a supreme or superior being. Okay, that's a nice one. But I do a section on science and religion in my philosophy of science class. And so here's the definition I give. Religion is a belief in something. So it seems like the word belief is key. The belief is not necessarily substantiated by physical and material evidence. It's not a physical belief necessarily. Religious knowledge is attained through holy writings, authority, revelations, or religious experiences. So there's some kind of authority tied into any particular religion. And religious beliefs have faith in such knowledge. Now, here's my real definition. I don't know what religion is, but I know one when I see one. All right? Seriously. All right? Even if you don't have a good definition, I think we know what a religion is. So there's a sense in which I don't think we really need a definition. All right, now, things I'm not going to cover in this class is alternative philosophies, such as postmodernism, secular humanism, existentialism, Marxism, Stoicism, these kinds of things. I'm going to refer a little bit to Stoicism and Epicureanism, simply because that was something where you see Paul interacting and explaining Christianity. So I'm not going to talk about that. And then there's so many other religions. There's so many religions. So we're not going to talk about Iglesia de Cristo from the Philippines or Falun Gong or these other things. Paganism, Wicca, Manichaeism, Santeria. There's so many other religions, and we're just not going to cover those because. All right. What about cults? Now, I'm going to avoid using the word cult in this class. If you look it up in Webster, a cult is a particular ritual or system of worship. Was Christianity a cult then?
Yes.
Yes. All religions are cults. So the dictionary definition doesn't really help at all, because we know that a cult is a very, very bad thing, right? So, involves devoted or extravagant homage or adoration of some figure. Would that describe Christianity? Yeah? All right. Well, then what's a cult? Well, I'm not sure what a cult is. I think there's the American meaning of the word. I think extreme adoration of a particular person who's either alive or who was recently alive. Well, I guess that could be Christianity as well. All right. Again, I guess the same definition. I guess I know a cult when I see one. But because the word is not very well defined, all right, so people say Mormonism is a cult. All right, fine. So is Christianity. So I'm just not going to use that word. We're not going to worry about whether something's a cult or not. It's kind of a negative word. All right, good. So now I want to define certain terms I'll be using as we understand different world religions. Animism. Animism is the ancient religion everywhere in the world. Literally everywhere in the world. If you go back, the early form of religion was animism. All right, and so animism was seeing spirits. The world is occupied by all these different spirits. The spirits in the rocks, the spirits in the tree, the spirits in the water, the spirits in the stars and the sun. And even inanimate objects had spirit in them. Okay? Now, none of the religions we're going to look at are animistic. All right, and you're maybe used to hearing all these animistic religions in Africa. Right, fine, but animistic religions everywhere. Jen and I just got back from Indonesia, and Indonesia is officially a Muslim country, but there's animism permeates Islam in Indonesia in rather shocking ways. All right, polytheism. All right, and one of the world religions we're going to talk about definitely is polytheistic, and that's Hinduism. All right, so, but anyway, everybody knows what that means. Poly, many, theism, many gods. So this is the idea. And, you know, anthropologists and people who study religions like to say, you know, sort of say animism, polytheism, monotheism. It's just a natural evolution. And, of course, they discount the possibility that any of these happen to be true. All right, but I suppose you could argue, I suppose, is cultures develop that polytheism would be a higher level, I guess, in a sense, than animism. All right, and of course, polytheism, when we think of the Greek religions, ancient Greek religions, certainly the Norse religions and things like that, okay? Now, pantheism is the basic philosophy of over a third of people in the world, okay? And almost all Eastern religions are pantheistic. So I do want to spend some time defining that. So the pantheist sees, basically pan means all, and theism means God. The pantheism says all is God. So if all is God, guess who's God? We are God. And that's the essence of Hinduism. Whether that's the essence of Buddhism is very debatable. All right, we'll talk about that. And Jaina, and etc. Basically, most Eastern religion is pantheistic. So God is the universe is God. And of course, this is the religious philosophy behind movies like Star Wars. And what's the one The Matrix. The Matrix. And really, this is the religion of Hollywood, actually. All right? And so you see pantheism everywhere. Life of Pi. All right? Life of Pi is pantheism. So, and pantheism has come to America only in the last 150 years, but it's permeating our culture in a lot of ways. And of course, New Age religion is also pantheism. It's a lot of things, but it's pantheism. So another word, this is a big fancy word, panentheism, which is not God is everything and God is in everything. Stoics believe that. Let's not worry about that big fancy word. Okay, dualism, this is another important religion. And Confucianism, kind of yin-yang. All right, so the idea of dualism is that God is real and evil is real, and the world is some sort of battle between the forces of good and the forces of evil. You think that sounds like Star Wars, but no, not really. Star Wars is really pantheistic. Not that Star Wars religion really matters, it's just a movie. All right. So Taoism. Yeah. Do you have a question?
No.
False Christian movements have moved towards dualism. Albigensianism, which is a Christian movement in the 12th, 13th, and 1400s, which was brutally destroyed by the Catholic Church. In fact, that religion, that Christian cult, if you will, oops, I just used that word, was what led to the formation of the Inquisition, was to wipe these people out. So dualism has, and by the way, Augustine, the most important theologian in the history of Christianity, came from Manichaeism, which is a strongly dualistic religion. And really this comes a lot from the Greek idea that the physical world is evil and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to be talking about that a lot, but we'll mention dualism as we go along occasionally. Deism, a belief in a distant but unevolved God. Deism is a religious movement that really started in the 1700s with the Enlightenment. It's really a strain, if you will, of Christianity. The Unitarian Church is a deistic. So, anyway, I don't want to spend much time there. And then monotheism, that's a good one. Yay, monotheism, yes. All right, so a belief that the universe is created and governed by a single, personal, all-powerful spiritual being. So that would be monotheism. So if you have a theistic worldview, all right, and see, a deist would also be a monotheist, all right? They just think that the God who created the universe isn't interacting with his creation. Albert Einstein was a deist. Benjamin Franklin was a deist. Thomas Jefferson was a deist. This is a very powerful religious movement in the 1700s, 1800s. And then a couple other words we're going to talk about quite a bit. Now, asceticism is not a religion, but asceticism is an aspect of religious practice, which is very powerful strains, especially in Buddhism and Hinduism. Asceticism has been a very powerful influence in Christianity. My sister happens to be a nun. So a belief that enlightenment or a close relationship with God is attained by an extreme denial of worldly pleasures and possessions in monks, nuns, monasteries, that kind of thing. Okay. Mysticism. We're not going to be doing much with mysticism, so I'll skip that. All right, other important words, if you will, as we go through Scripture. Now, the definition of Scripture, it kind of depends on what religion you're talking about, okay? We have a definition of Scripture that sort of is inherent to our thinking. So we assume a Scripture then would be an authoritative writing which is inspired. All right, and I think the word Scripture in all religions would be an authoritative writing, but whether it's inspired or not, in pantheism, what would it mean to have it be inspired? Inspired by what? Okay, so my definition is the list of primary authoritative writings for a particular religion. By the way, this is the boring part of the class. You just have to put up with this, okay? Just, all right, yeah. Got to have all this, stuff. Yeah. Yeah. This thing is so big, I'm going to have a hard time putting it up on my website. I might have to divide it up into two or three parts. But yeah, it'll definitely be there. And it should also be at the church website, hopefully. We're switching who does that right now for the church, so I'm not going to count on that. All right, then inspiration. And clearly, Islam would understand this concept of inspiration, as would Christianity. The belief that a particular writing, edict, or tradition comes by direct communication from divinity. All right? And then myth. We don't talk too much about myth here. All right, now, I want to deal with the question of, you know, it's all different paths to the same thing. Right, and that's a common philosophy, certainly. You know, Jesus said, "I came to testify to the truth," and Pontius Pilate said, "Well, what is truth?" You know, that's a good question. Is there truth? I'm sure you've heard of postmodernism, right? All right. Let me see here. Yeah. So one point of view is, you know, different paths to the same thing. You know, we're all going to the same place. God's up there, so we can get there. We got mysticism, and we got Islam and Christianity. That's one of the ways. Baha'i, Buddhism. You know, they're all kind of doing the same thing. You know, all pointing the same direction. They all have pretty much the same beliefs and ideas, right? Well, you know what? There's a certain amount of truth to that. That's the problem with something that's not true. If it's partly true, that's part of the problem. Because there, you know, I think we should acknowledge there is some truth to that. And one of the reasons for that is that there's some truth in all religions. But of course, see, postmodernism says that there is no truth. There's just interpretation, and you know, if enough people believe it, it becomes true simply by the fact of them believing it, that they make their own truth and that kind of stuff. So this idea, this is something that I think we need to be aware of and counter. We need to challenge this crazy, ridiculous, stupid, forgive me, but crazy way of thinking that they're all paths to the same place. All right? And yet, this is a very common idea. Now, Jesus didn't seem to agree with this. Not really. All right? He said, "Wide is the gate, and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." And then, he said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So, basically saying, if you're not a Christian, you're not going to heaven. And you don't have a relationship with God, you're in darkness, you're going to hell, you're deceived. Well, that's kind of harsh, kind of close-minded. Alright? But I want to argue, before we start talking about these different worldviews and religions, I want to argue that this idea that it's just different paths at the same place, this is irrational. This is craziness. Alright? Because if Jesus is who he said he was, then these other people are definitely not going to heaven. And they're living, you know, according to a philosophy tonight, that which is absolutely and completely, totally not true. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about that. First of all, we should acknowledge it's not as if there's no similarity, okay? If you say there's no similarity, you're going to come across like a fool. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so obviously there are parallels between different religions. Okay, we're not going to deny that. And I would say all man-made religions, I believe the other ones are man-made, that there's some truth there. Here's my explanation for it, for what it's worth, is that, you know, we are made in the image of God, and God has put a conscience in us, and all of us, whether we're Christians or not, understand that there is God. And atheists, even atheists believe in God, they just don't admit it. Mm-hmm. All right? But we know that there's God. We know that there's justice. Something about us knows there is justice, there is accountability, and we're going to pay the piper. All right? And we somehow seem to know that when we die, we're not dead like Rover, dead all over. It was just humans everywhere in the world throughout history have all known this somehow. And of course, since they were trying to create their explanation of this out of their own selves, they messed up really badly, because the truth is something that nobody ever would have thought of. Nobody ever would have thought of that one. All right, but on the basic level, then, the theologies are absolutely in contrast. All right, and I think we need to bear that in mind. So I believe God did put a knowledge of Him on some basic level inherent to us. We're born understanding and knowing that there is God, and that there is accountability, and that there is justice and holiness, and these things are real. So I think of other world religions as human attempts to deal with this innate knowledge that we have. All right, and another thing is, some of the parallels are because Christianity has been the dominant world religion for quite a while. And so what you'll find is little snippets of Christianity sneaking into Hinduism, at least the kind of Hinduism that's practiced here, like New Age religion. Or, especially into New Age, a lot of New Age is sort of Christian ideas dressed up in the form of Eastern religion. For example, the idea that individuals have innate value, which makes no sense at all in New Age religion. All right, or the idea that God is loving, which would come from no other religion but Christianity. And yet a lot of religions have sort of hijacked Christianity and sort of pasted it on their religion. And so that's another explanation, I believe, for some of the similarities, is because people look at Christianity, they go, well, that's pretty good. They don't do this consciously. All right? I don't mean to imply that people are doing this because they're wickedly trying to, you know, deceive people. But I think this happens. One thing I know, though, is this idea that there's, you know, different roads to the same place is nonsense. Because if Hinduism is right, then Jesus is a deceiver and a liar.
That's right.
And a crazy person and a dangerous person who should be rejected, and maybe they should have killed him. Okay? You know, and what we're going to see is, even as we look at the Christian worldview, if Genesis 1:1 is right, then none of these other religions make any sense at all. And we'll see that as we look at that. So, if Christianity is true, then Muhammad is a liar and a very bad person. Okay? And he may not have thought himself that way. He may have been sincere. I don't know. But bad in the sense that his influence has caused millions and millions of people to not go to heaven. In that sense. So this idea that these things, which radically, diametrically, absolutely oppose one another as a worldview, can both be true, is kind of like saying, you know, that, you know, all the different teams in the NFL won the Super Bowl last year. All right? Sure. All right? If you believe that, all right, you'll believe almost anything. All right. So if Genesis 1:1 is true, then animism, polytheism, pantheism, dualism, naturalism, deism, postmodernism, and every otherism is flat out not true. Well, you could go with postmodernism and say there is no truth. All right, there's no truth. All right, so you don't believe that you're alive. All right, and you don't believe that the earth exists. I mean, come on, give me a break. So these conflicting worldviews cannot be accommodated. Are there similar ethical thinking from many religions? Certainly. All right? And should we criticize other religions for that? No. We should acknowledge that and say that's a good thing. I think that's what Paul did. All right. So how then should we interact with members of other religions? I'm using what Paul did in Acts 17 as my outline here. This didn't come from me, and I think Acts 17 is inspired. We need to find common ground. So you don't start by talking to a Muslim by saying, did you know that Muhammad had 32 wives and he murdered all these Jews in Medina? Did you know that? All right? That's not likely to
win them over.
You find common ground not because you're trying to manipulate them or you're trying to deceive them, but because you want to start a conversation and you do have common ground. As human beings, you both agree that we're not all there is, and that there is truth, and that our goal as human beings is to find that truth and to devote our life to that truth. We do have common ground. Okay? And then give respect where respect is due. Alright? And, you know, there's things about Islam, actually, that I like. I'll even talk about that when I get to Islam. Personally, I like Buddha. I think he's a great guy. Other than the fact that he abandoned his wife and his kids. If you take that out of the equation, everything else about him, I really like. And when I've traveled to Buddhist countries, I'll say that publicly. All right? And so I think we should give respect to respect is due. And if people are highly devoted and have given their whole life and heart to something, I think we should honor that. You know the situation where the apostle said to Jesus, these guys are casting out demons in your name. Blitz those guys. And Jesus says, why should we do that? You know? Why should we do that? So acknowledge the good. Don't make personal attacks. Especially don't attack the people that they revere. That's definitely not a good start there. But then, having established a common ground, then highlight the distinctions. All right? Not to attack what they think other than what you think, but to say, all right, let's talk about some ways that how we approach things are clearly different. Let's kind of establish those things which are clearly not the same, and then we can start talking about that. That's what Paul did in Acts 17. Let's go to Acts 17. Okay. And basically then, having established a basis for a conversation, having respected what needs to be respected, having given honor where honor is due, having found common ground, and then our job is to introduce the Christian worldview. Introduce it in a non-emotional, non-confrontative way. All right? That's what Paul did in Acts 17. My Bible's upside down. I'll turn it right side up. Okay, good. I can't. I mean, I suppose maybe I could, but all right, Acts 17. Here Paul is interacting with Greek religious people, essentially. Okay? In verse 17, so he reasoned in the synagogue. So he began by having just a reasoned discussion. Now, sometimes you can't have one. There's a guy that I was trying to interact with, a Muslim guy, recently, and I thought we were having a reasoned conversation until I pointed out some things about Islam that might possibly, you know, need to be thought about, and I won't tell you what happened from there, but it didn't go very well. Well, I'll just leave it at that. All right, and you cannot have a reasoned conversation with some people. So if you can't, don't. You know, then don't. And again, if we're gonna take this approach, then fine. But a lot of people, you can't. With somebody like that, all you can do is just be a Christian. All right, just be a Christian and hope that at some point they'll find what you're doing attractive enough to maybe they would actually have a conversation with you. So anyway, Paul had a reasoned conversation, but that's probably because the Greeks were so proud of how reasonable they were. All right, and sometimes you can use people's pride against them in a sense, you know, kind of use that to help them get converted. It, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. All right. So he reasoned them in verse 18, a group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. These were the most powerful religion/philosophies of his day. They're right there in Athens. And Athens was the most religious city in the Roman world at the time. And so I'm going to skip down a little bit. I want to read the whole thing. Verse 22, then Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and he said, men of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. All right, we're all very religious. All right, good. For as I walked around and looked carefully at the objects of worship, I even found an altar with an inscription to an unknown God. Now, what you worship is something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you. So he said, I'm going to tell you about God, just a different description of God. Now, the two worldviews were Epicureanism, which was... it turns out some of the parallels between Greek ideas and religion in India are not an accident, by the way. Because if you go to the, we call Iran today, Persia, and the religion in Persia highly influenced Greece and it highly influenced India. And so some of their ideas are fairly similar. So the Epicureans had this idea that of God sort of filling the world, essentially. But not being personal at all. So he says, the God who made the world. Let's stop right there. All right, the God who made the world. See, the Epicureans said, God is the world. And he said, the God who made the world. So he's kind of showing them a different concept. He said, no, God is not the world. He said, God made the world. and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and does not live in temples built by hands. Now, they're common ground. Because these guys think idolatry is stupid. All right? They understand worshiping this statue and coming here and making this offering to this god, and you know, and the, you know, the worship of Diana or Athena. These guys know that's just, you know, that's just for the common people. These guys. So he's finding common ground here. We all agree that God does not live in temples built by hands. All right, we're good. We're good with that. He's there, he says, and he's not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives men, all men, life and breath and everything else. From one man he made every nation. Skip down verse 27. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out to him and find him. Now here he's starting to talk about a personal God. And that's where Stoicism is not working too well. Because to the Stoic, the Stoics are deists. And they, by the way, they were monotheists. All right. In fact, really, the entire audience he's talking to are monotheists. All right, I don't know if you're aware of that. Now, of course, Rome was filled with polytheism. You're aware of that. But the Stoics were monotheists. All right. So, but see, he said, "You think of a God as distant and doesn't know us." You know, to the Stoic, it was like we're left here all alone. Basically, that was the Stoic idea. We got to work it out for ourselves. Too bad. And he says, no, the God that I worship is one who knows us and who wants to be known for us. You know, we, in him we live and move and have our being. And then, like, and then even quotes Aretas, who was a Stoic philosopher. One thing about Paul is he knew their philosophy. He knew their religion. All right? He knew the Quran better than the Muslims do. That's not literally true. He understood Hinduism, and he knew what the Vedas were. He'd read a little bit of the Vedas. He understood the relationship between the Vedas and the Brahmanas and the Upanishad. And he was aware of what a Shaivite and a Vishnaite was, and kind of where they're coming from. And he could quote some of their philosophers. That's what Paul could do. And I think that's one of the reasons he was able to help so many of them become Christians. And so, this is advertising the class. You're already here. But, you know, part of how we can help people. Now, understand this. You know, dealing with worldview and understanding world religions is only going to help certain people. All right? Other people, what you're learning here is not going to make much difference at all. You understand that, right? A lot of people are just going to see, wow, look at that person's life. What's going on there? I want to find out what they're doing. All right? For those people, this class won't be that helpful. All right? And so it'll just be helpful for you to understand them, perhaps. All right, and anyway, so we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think the divine being is like gold or silver or stone. Now, what has he not mentioned yet? He hasn't mentioned Jesus. He's, because to, that's going to be disturbing for them. You know, when you're talking to a Muslim, don't go to the Trinity right away. Don't do that. And you're talking to a Hindu, you know, Jesus is God, but you may want to, you know, you may want to not go there right away. All right? Try to get to understand some of the basic concepts of even who God is. The fact that God is personal. That he, the reason we exist is so that we could know God. Which obviously Hindus don't understand that at all. All right. Anyway, I just thought that would be useful to kind of see. This is the outline. He told them God is creator. God's close to us. He's personal. He's given us an individual purpose. He will bring us all under judgment, and we have to deal with that. Okay. So worldview. Let's talk about worldview a bit. All right. What is a worldview? Well, here's a definition of James Sire. That, again, that's the book that I'm recommending here. All right. He said, a worldview is a commitment, a fundamental orientation of the heart that can be expressed as a story or a set of presuppositions. Assumptions. A presupposition is an assumption that is not being questioned, that forms the basis for viewing the world. Okay. A fundamental orientation of the heart that can be expressed as a story or a set of presuppositions which we hold about the basic nature of the universe, of the world. Okay? One's worldview is the perspective one uses to process, interpret information received about the world. So, basically, your worldview is so like a set of glasses. To the postmodernists, they look at the worldview and they say, well, what's the truth over there? What's the truth over there? What's the truth over there? Isn't that cool? Look at that other truth over there. Isn't that really cool? The world is so much better because there's so many different truths. Well, I think the world is so much better because there's so many different cultures, but I don't know. And the pantheist looks at the world, and they see themselves reflected in the world. They see a tree. They see a cow. They see another person, and they're seeing themselves. And they see their ultimate goal is to not exist anymore. Is to be swallowed up by this, you know, it's this universal Brahman or something like that. And so your worldview determines how you view what happens. You know, for us, something really cool happens, we say, amen, that was God. And for us, something bad happens, we say, amen, that was God. Well, that's part of our worldview. And a Muslim won't see it that way. A Muslim absolutely will not see it that way. They'll see it very differently. And so I think being aware of how other people see the world, what their worldview is key to understand how they're thinking. And I believe ultimately important to helping them understand Christianity, and I believe ultimately to be attracted to Christianity. Okay, I think so. So here's my quick little outline of what would make a worldview a good one. It has to be true. So we're going to look at worldviews such as, you know, Hinduism or religions, but, you know, pantheism, dualism. We're going to look at different cosmologies, different religions. We're going to ask a simple question. Is it true? Okay? In other words, is what Buddhists say has to be true, otherwise they're not right, is it actually true? Okay, and that's a question I think we can ask and answer, especially as we look at cosmologies. All right, for example, the Hindu believes the physical world is not real, and it's bad. Well, is that consistent with reality? That's a question we can ask. All right, and so to me, a worldview that's not true is not a very good one. You know, we could talk about naturalism or the atheist worldview. Is it true? Next, does it answer the question that people really want to have answered? And James Sayer gives a nice list of the important questions that a religion would have to answer in order to be, I guess, qualified, if you will, to be a good religion. All right. He said, let me see. What is the prime reality? What's the nature of God? Or what is the nature of external reality? In other words, what's the nature of the world as opposed to us? All right. What is a human being? That's a good question. What are we? All right. Do we have a body or are we a body? All right. I think that I exist, but do I exist? The Hindu view on that is extremely different from the Christian view on that, the nature of what we are. What happens when we die? How can we know? How can we know things? How can we even know things, if we can indeed know things at all? How can we know right from wrong? What's the meaning of human history? Is there any meaning to human history? All right, what's my purpose? What's the nature of my relationship with God? These are all important questions that I think that should be answered by any worldview. What's my value? Okay, what's my purpose? The Buddhist answer to that is very different. The Muslim answer to that, the Jaina answer, the Taoist answer to that is very, very different. All right, and so these are some of the questions that each worldview asks, and so we're gonna look at that, and we're gonna ask, does this worldview give satisfactory answers to some of these questions? As we go through each religion, we're gonna look at them as a worldview, and we're gonna analyze how they hold up to some of these questions. And then the third point I would make on whether a worldview is a good one is, does it make those who believe it better than they would be otherwise. Okay? Yes?
Your sentence there actually says people who hold to it rather than simply believe it.
Thank you.
I think that's important.
All right. Those who hold to it. In other words, those who live out this worldview, this religion, are they made better for having done that? Now, you could say, well, how do you know what's better? Well, I think we could get 8 people in a room, all right? We could get a Muslim, a Christian, a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Baha'i, whatever, and then throw in a postmodernist and an atheist, throw them in a room, and say, we're not allowed out of the room until you come up with a list of 6 qualities that would make a person a good person. And I think they'd come to a consensus within just a few minutes. All right? A person who cares about other people, open-minded, blah, you know, have the list. And a good question is, does this worldview, does this religion tend to make people have these qualities that all of us know would separate a, in quotes, good person from a bad person? I believe on all these points, Christianity rises way above all these other religions. Now, the purpose of this class is not to say, ha, those stupid people, that what a dumb religion. That is not it. The purpose of the class is to understand the religion. And yes, we're going to make comparisons. There's some apologetics going on here, obviously. But the idea is hopefully to understand, to be informed. All right? Good. So, let's see. Yeah, let's take our break now. Let's take our break now. We'll split up. I'm going to be talking about worldview for about 15 minutes, and we will talk about Hinduism today. So we're going to talk about one. We're going to hit one religion today, which is Hinduism. All right. So we'll take about a 7 or 8 minute break.
To the